I'm David Ginder from Classical WETA.
And I'm Classical WETA's Marilyn Cooley. And this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra introduction to Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade. In the 1880s, Rimsky-Korsakov was finishing up Borodin's Prince Igor.
Prince Igor was the most famous opera by Borodin, but he left it incomplete. He died in the process of finishing it. So it fell to Rimsky to finish it up. In fact, he did a lot of this, you know, arranging people's works, cleaning up their messes, finishing up things that were left incomplete, and he did that with Prince Igor.
The opera is set in the East, and working on that piece with its flavors and sounds and stories of the East inspired Rimsky to conceive his own Oriental work, an orchestral fantasy inspired by the Arabian Nights or the Thousand and One Nights.
Yeah, what we collectively refer to as the Arabian Nights or Thousand and One Nights is a collection of Arabic, Persian, and Indian tales that fascinated the world since the 9th century. The French translation by Antoine Galland has been available since the early 18th century.
And so, Scheherazade, it's always been a favorite of European and American armchair travelers. And Rimsky, by the way, did experience the sights and sounds of the East personally, not just through working to get Prince Igor ready for performance. It was during a trip with his family, and he was intoxicated with everything he experienced, most notably the near-constant music-making in the streets and everywhere else.
Rimsky-Korsakov wrote as a preface to Scheherazade that the Sultan Shahryar was convinced of the infidelity of all women, and so he vowed to kill each wife after the first night. Scheherazade proposed instead that she retell a series of tales over 1,001 nights. The Sultan postponed Scheherazade's execution each day and finally renounced the death resolution entirely.
Rimsky wasn't obsessed that you focus on and understand the minutiae of the extra musical program here. Rather, he thought the general idea of these faraway tales would snare your curiosity and enhance the listening experience. He gave each movement a suggestive title, but the titles are rather vague, actually just giving you a flavor of what's to come without getting too line-by-line and note-by-note specific.
Rimsky-Korsakov was more interested that you set yourself in the East in general and enjoy the faraway sensations of the Arabian Nights, all in the process of listening to what is undeniably great orchestral writing, great attractive tunes, and many, many, we're going to talk a lot about this, many solo opportunities for various members of the orchestra.
So, although we won't scrutinize every little detail of the storytelling, because, for one thing, that level of detail isn't there to begin with, and also, it wasn't at all Rimsky's intention that you hear all that little detail or identify it in order to enjoy the piece. We'll begin with the specific musical identifications of the major players in our story. These identifications occur right at the beginning of the piece.
Yeah, the loud proclamation at the very opening is obviously the Sultan. That's generally considered to be the Sultan's tune, but Rimsky himself later said, as he was kind of backing away from literary references in the piece, that the Sultan's tune was not necessarily the Sultan's tune.
We mention it anyway.
Right. We mention it anyway because that's the general thinking.
Right after we're musically introduced to the Sultan, soft winds lead to a tune that is entirely the opposite. This is the seductive voice of Scheherazade, played by solo violin with harp. Rimsky, by the way, did not back away from conceding that this was, indeed, Scheherazade's theme. Thank you. In the first movement, the sea and Sinbad's ship.
And remember, not to get too caught up in these titles. It's just kind of a general mood setter.
And the mood here is majestic. The Sultan's motive is the principal idea. Recall the Sultan's theme.
Here in the movement itself, it is more than just a proclamation. This is the main theme of the first movement.
Notice next all the attractive solos, the horn, the flute, the oboe, all playing a combination of the Sultan's theme and Scheherazade's theme.
Scheherazade's tune returns, again in the solo violin, but later in the movement, it's much more fanciful.
Back to combining the two tunes, they're even more exotically intertwined here, with the Sultan's tune in the horns and Scheherazade's tune in the high strings.
Even though throughout the course of the movement there is a lot of intertwining and interplay between these two tunes, the Sultan's tune is the main theme of the first movement. The second movement is called the Qalandar Prince, and Scheherazade's theme begins the second movement. The bassoon has this far-off sounding, airy tune.
Then the oboe gets the theme. And you notice in the oboe it's faster, and that tempo increase continues when the strings get the tune. We're still talking about the same theme that started in the bassoon.
Going next to the wind section of the orchestra, then to a wonderful cello solo, not played by the section, but just by the principal cellist, and the tempo is slower again, much slower.
There are great brass fanfares that are based on the Sultan's theme.
Thank you.
Those fanfares lead to an absolutely magical section where the clarinet has a recitative.
Now, generally, when we talk about recitative, it's the recitation that is used a lot in opera and in oratorio, for that matter, which moves the story forward. It's not so much focused on the tune and the harmony and the music in general, but more on the words, just moving the story forward. So that's the recitation, the recitative here from the clarinet.
And not only that, but the clarinet recitative, which seems all but improvisatory, which often is true for a recitative anyway.
Sure, exactly.
It's over what seems to be almost random, almost unmeasured, plucked strings. The recitative is later taken up by the bassoon.
And then there are some more fanfares in the brass and leading to a really amazing section. It's kind of a light, airy kind of scherzo that seems to be this kind of bizarre combination of several things. One is Mendelssohn. You know, Mendelssohn was actually very famous and good at writing light, airy scherzos. The most famous examples are being in the Midsummer Night's Dream music. Exactly. He also wrote one in the famous octet, and there are others as well that are not quite so famous. But Mendelssohn was famous for these light, airy scherzos. So that's one thing you kind of hear here. But also, the Queen Mab scherzo from Berlioz's Romeo and Juliet is kind of suggested here. And it's also, I think you'll notice this, I did, a kind of prediction of The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Now, that hasn't been written yet.
Right.
Paul Dukas is about to write it in 10 years. But I think you'll hear the suggestion of The Sorcerer's Apprentice here.
The movement ends big and brilliantly with a lead up from the principal cellist.
We're at the halfway point now, and we've talked a lot about solos. The violin with Scheherazade's tune, the bassoon tune at the beginning of the second movement, taken up later by the oboe, the clarinet recitative we just talked about, taken up later by the bassoon. There are many more solos to come. This extensive solo work, in fact, is a hallmark of this piece. There are many, many solos. It's an aspect of the piece that makes it attractive to play by the individual members of the orchestra because they get the spotlight. They get to do their thing by themselves. It's attractive to listen to also because although the piece is scored for a very large orchestra, it's made so personal by these many solos. And it's interesting to listen to and frankly to watch as well because some conductors really pull themselves kind of out of the picture and just let the soloists go for it and do their own thing when the spotlight is on them. So watch for it. Listen for it. It's an excellent demonstration that an orchestra is a collective of individuals.
The other point about Scheherazade is the orchestration. Rimsky-Korsakov was brilliant with the orchestra, and literally, he wrote the book on it.
Yes, his book is called Principles of Orchestration. And he wrote on the subject, to orchestrate is to create, and this cannot be taught.
Sounds like kind of a one-sentence book. But think of it this way. The creation has a lot to do with technique, and technique can be taught, and that's the point of Rimsky's book.
Exactly.
It teaches using lots of musical examples, and that's what really sets it apart from other books on this subject.
He explains, for example, how to allow a melody to stand out from its harmony so the tune isn't lost in the harmony. And this is a success that is achieved not by how it's played, I mean, anybody can emphasize the melody and pull back on the harmony, but by how it's written on the page. And Rimsky-Korsakov also writes about specific instruments and about the various sections of the orchestra and so on. It is still a great text on orchestration. So yes, Rimsky-Korsakov knew orchestration. This book proves it.
And the piece Scheherazade proves it too. The third movement, The Young Prince and the Young Princess, is more leisurely as the first movement was. Among other things, in this more gentle movement, the writing for quiet percussion is quite beguiling. I don't think of percussion normally as being quiet.
Well, this is actually a piece for a very large orchestra, and it has a very large percussion section, and often everything is being hit pretty hard, you know, the gong and everything. Well, in this particular section we're about to hear, it's this little march, and he's using, I think, snare drum and tambourine, I think.
I think that's right.
And it's just this little percussive sound kind of moving things along.
And it's so gentle. It's kind of really fun. The movement ends with the lyric main theme.
The finale is called Festival at Baghdad, and it opens as the first movement did, with a bold statement of the Sultan's tune. Recall the very beginning of the piece. But here at the start of the finale, the statement of the Sultan's theme is more extensive and elaborate.
And also at the start of the finale, just as it was at the start of the whole piece, is a statement of Scheherazade's theme. But this also is more extensive and elaborate, and vigorous, though still in solo violin. After which, the drama of the movement is high, leading eventually to a big statement of the Sultan's theme in the trombones, while this intense business is going on elsewhere in the orchestra.
This is the apex of the piece. Leading up to this is a lot of drama and brilliant writing for the orchestra. This is really a feast of orchestra writing in this finale of the piece. The piece works toward its conclusion with combinations again of the distinct themes of our two characters. Scheherazade is in the violin solo again, and this time the Sultan's tune is in the low strings.
And Scheherazade gets the last word. Her tune is played in the low register of the solo violin.
Yeah, most of the time so far, when her tune is played by the solo violin, it's been in the upper register. Here it starts in the low register.
And then it climbs higher and higher and higher and disappears.
It will be Scheherazade's first good night's sleep in almost 3 years. I'm David Ginder from Classical WETA.
And I'm Classical WETA's Marilyn Cooley. And this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra introduction to Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade.